Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Friday, December 28th, 2012. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. Sitka Mayor Mim McConnell arrived with her gavel, but the rest of Sitka Assembly were no shows at Wednesday's evening's regular assembly meeting. Acting Municipal Clerk Sarah Peterson, who was also present, had warned the media and the public that there would be likely no quorum for the meeting, which was originally scheduled to fall on Christmas Day. Sitka's municipal charter specifies that the assembly shall meet on the second and fourth Tuesdays of every month. Mayor McConnell took no official action. Peterson said that the two items of old business and three items of new business would be placed on the assembly's agenda for their first regular meeting of the new year on January 8th. A small cruise line with ties to the conservation community in Southeast Alaska has filed a lawsuit over the Federal Fisheries Observer Program, saying that too many Chinook and halibut will go uncounted when new rules take effect in January. The boat company filed documents in Alaska District Court on December 21st, challenging the restructured monitoring program developed by the National Marine Fisheries Service for federal waters off the coast of Alaska. Earlier this fall, NMFS announced plans to move forward with a controversial rule expanding its onboard observer program to include smaller vessels in the halibut and black cod fleets. Onboard observers have been a part of the large boat trawl fleet for years. In a news release issued yesterday afternoon, the boat company president Hunter McIntosh states, fishery stakeholders expected that the restructured program would improve coverage of fisheries that remove the largest volumes of halibut and Chinook salmon as bycatch. Instead, NMFS developed an expensive and inefficient program that diverts observer coverage from trawl vessels to smaller vessels that use lower-impact selective fishing gear. The Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association, which represents many Alaskan hook-and-line fishing boats, spent the past 2 years testing an electronic monitoring system, which they claim is a more cost-effective and more efficient program than human monitoring. Redistricting and elections knocked several longtime Southeast politicians out of office this year. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld takes a look at regional news of 2012.
This is Ed Schoenfeld with some of the region's top stories of 2012. The year saw three longtime incumbent lawmakers lose their seats in the legislature. Haines Republican Bill Thomas's loss was the biggest upset. Many expected an easy re-election since he co-chaired the budget writing House Finance Committee.
I'm in a leadership position and in a position to help not only just my district but all of Southeast.
But then Sitka Democrat Jonathan Christ Tompkins filed and began introducing himself to the district.
I'm knocking on every door in Hangoon and Heidelberg and Kasan and Sitka and everywhere else.
The final tally gave the 23-year-old political newcomer a 32-vote win. Redistricting was one reason for Thomas's loss. It also helped Sitka Republican Bert Stedman defeat Angoon Democrat Albert Kukesh. Both are incumbents. It was also a factor in Ketchikan incumbent Kyle Johansson's defeat. He left a crowded GOP primary to run as an independent, but didn't get far.
I am registered as a Republican, and the party is backing Wilson, and that's as far as it goes.
Wrangell incumbent Peggy Wilson went on to beat Johansson and Democrat Matt Olson by a strong margin. In all, redistricting took Southeast's 8 legislative seats down to 6, and the election cost the region both its native lawmakers. The year also brought changes to the ferry system. Marine Highways Chief Mike Newsell announced reestablishment of Angoon's connection to Sitka.
That's made possible by the fact that the dock in Angoon was completely rebuilt and is now compatible with the fast vehicle ferry Fairweather.
Plans for the Alaska-class ferry underwent a significant alteration this year. Governor Sean Parnell announced a single, medium-sized vessel would cost far more than expected. He said two small shuttle ferries were a better idea.
My goal is to make sure that the schedules are maintained or bettered, so the service is maintained or bettered. I want to make sure that vessels are built on budget, and I'm working hard to get those built here in Ketchikan.
Also this year, Angoon, Heidelberg, Sitka, Ketchikan, and some other locations continued pushing for new or expanded hydropower plants. Meanwhile, the Southeast Alaska Power Agency considered streamlining operations at its two dams, serving Wrangell, Petersburg, and Ketchikan. A report suggested having one, not two, operators would save up to $500,000 a year. But concerns about reliability and efficiency pushed the decision into 2013. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
The U.S. Forest Service's draft environmental study for a power line from Petersburg to Cake is supposed to be out for public review this spring. At the same time, the Federal Highway Administration is just getting started with a study for a controversial road and ferry connection that could accompany the transmission line. While the two projects are closely linked, planning for the intertie is well ahead and the two environmental impact statements remain separate. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein asked federal officials and project consultants for an update.
There are a lot of agencies, organizations, and consultants playing various roles in both projects. The Southeast Alaska Power Agency has taken over management of the electric intertie. The idea of that project is to provide the struggling diesel-dependent town of Cake with cheaper hydroelectric power from Petersburg. SEPA currently owns two hydroelectric plants and transmission lines serving Petersburg, Wrangell, and Ketchikan, and is run by a board of representatives from those municipalities. Under a memorandum of understanding it signed this summer, SEPA agreed to construct, own, operate, and maintain the proposed Cake connection as well. That's provided the line is paid for with grants or Cake power rates. SEPA has since used state funds to hire an engineering firm, Commonwealth Associates, to manage the project. Commonwealth's Mark Shinman is in charge and says the fieldwork for the environmental impact statement is complete.
Some draft documents have been written, and we're starting to review those with the Forest Service. We've gotten comments from the Forest Service. We're working through incorporating those comments. And we plan to issue a draft EIS in April or May of this coming year.
After the draft EIS comes out this spring, Shinman says they'll be holding meetings to gather more public input. He says the plan is to issue a final EIS in the fall of 2013. The Forest Service will ultimately decide whether to approve the final document and give the project the green light. Another consulting firm called Tetra Tech is researching and writing the actual EIS for the agency. According to Shinman, the environmental study is considering two primary routes for the intertie. Project proponents have discussed both options for years.
The northern route is one, and the northern route will generally follow what's been identified as a possible road that would interconnect Cake and Petersburg. So that route is being analyzed in the EIS. And then the other route that's being analyzed is what's been called the center-south route.
However, state officials have long pushed for construction of a road connection on the north end of Kuprinoff, so Shinman says the northern route will be the preferred alternative in the intertie EIS, but he says they are giving equal consideration to the center-south route.
We need to understand the environmental impacts before any final decisions are made, and the center-south route is certainly a definite possibility. As far as for construction purposes, the center-south route is a lower-cost route for us. And so it definitely has some advantages, and so we're going to be looking at it hard. But at the same time, if the state does build the road over the long term, there's some definite advantages to having the power line adjacent to the road for ongoing maintenance and operation of the line.
There's no guarantee a road will be approved for any particular route, and that presents a problem of timing since the environmental studies for both projects are separate.
How do you go about picking a preferred route for the power line when you don't know whether or not there's going to be a road or if it's going to be built or where it's going to be built?
That's something that's going to take some thought and some research, and we're going to have to coordinate with the road people and develop a good solution. And we don't have that done yet.
And the environmental impact statement for the proposed road is far behind the interties.
The Cake Access project is only in its infancy. It's just beginning.
That's Doug Heacock, spokesman for the Federal Highway Administration, which is the lead agency responsible for the Cake to Petersburg Road EIS. He says the agency plans to announce the beginning of the road's environmental review in mid-January and hold the first round of public meetings to gather local input the following month. The Alaska Department of Transportation's already proposed several potential alternatives for road and ferry crossings between the two towns. According to Heacock, those options could change.
The existing information that the state has put out
is useful, but I wouldn't want anybody to believe that those are the final choices, because again, the entire process that we're about to begin on is designed to find the best way, or the way that the public is most supportive of, and it may require some modifications of the existing routes or the recommended routes.
The state's preference for the northern route has generated controversy because it could end up putting a ferry terminal and road in the heart of the roadless city of Kuprnov, a small community of about 30 people just across the Wrangell Narrows from Petersburg. Like the intertie, the road would run along Tongass National Forest land, so Hecox says it will be up to the Forest Service, not Federal Highways, to make the final decision on whether the project's approved.
Our job is simply to make sure that the environmental documentation and all of the rules and requirements have been satisfied, and that some recommended route appears to be the logical choice for a variety of reasons.
And transportation, not power, is the focus for Federal Highways. Hecox says the agency has been asked to evaluate how to improve access to the very rural community of Cake. But along with access, road supporters have promoted the project as a way of lowering the cost of constructing and maintaining a power line. Hecox is not yet sure how that issue will factor into the road EIS.
Again, this all gets back to the public. If the public wants that, and they want to ensure that this route can accommodate underground power or whatever, we'll definitely look at, you know, kind of work that into the evaluation. But the decision about whether or not to include electric, you know, power lines with the road, I don't know that that would be our decision to make.
This past year, the state legislature appropriated $40 million for construction of a basic one-lane gravel road with turnouts on the north end of Kuprnov. That did not include money for the intertie, which has been estimated to cost around the same amount to build. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. And here's a look at Sitka Zone weather. Today, expect rain with highs around 41. Tonight, cloudy with a chance of rain, highs around 43.